Hi, everybody, and welcome to Tapped Into Psychedelics. I'm your host, Adam Tapp, and my guest today is Danny Bluefoot. Danny is a podcaster and an extremely accomplished facilitator with a whopping 750 group ceremonies. And how you doing, Danny?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
No, man. I honestly, like, we got introduced through one of our previous guests, Jared Rose, and Jared spoke very highly of you, and Jared's a very wonderful human being. And so, you know, the conversations that we had previous to this, like, I feel like you have a lot of very invaluable experience and general understanding of psilocybin and how it functions. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation sort of and where it kind of goes. So let's get it going, man.
Yeah, let's take the ride.
So, you know, I've done a lot of episodes loosely on psilocybin, but I've never really actually talked to someone who has done as much as you have in the way of facilitation. And I just sort of want to kind of get into the ideas of, you know, you did 750 group ceremonies. That's a lot of individuals. You've seen a lot of how this goes down. And I'm sort of just curious as to, you know, what are some of the interesting nuances or things that you've seen that have surprised you over the way of doing this? Like, you know, even interesting anecdotes to within and stories and some things about this that you have been sort of surprised by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always a really tough question when it's general.
Yeah, I know.
There's so many directions you can go. But I think the first thing that comes to mind is the variability of what qualifies as a mystical experience for people.
Yeah.
And what actually makes a mystical experience count for somebody. And like when I got started in the psychedelics, I thought it was like how intensely you see the alien or the phoenix and go to a different realm and all this stuff. And then now it's really kind of seems to me that it's about how swayed somebody is in the idea that there's a higher power. And it can look like anything as long as it like really speaks to the person. And I've seen so many different ways in which that can like come across to people.
See, that's such a really valuable point because everyone, I feel like there's generalized assumption that every time you do mushrooms, your first time, you're going to have this profound mystical experience and you're going to be changed forever. And that's generally what is projected or advertised. And that's obviously not the case. And then again, too, like you're talking about a mystical experience, you know, it's simply just a point of understanding can be a mystical experience, something that embeds inside you. You know, you can have a whole bunch of experiences where you're in multiple dimensions and seeing all these things. And if it doesn't change your patterns or change your programming, then is it a mystical experience? And that's like a super interesting, that's a really interesting thing, actually.
Yeah. It's really beautiful to watch when that hits somebody in all these various different forms.
So, and here's a follow-up question to that too, because, you know, the expectation I think everyone has going into a psychedelic experience for the first, second time is that I am going to walk away from this changed. So how often do people actually have what your definition, which I think is the appropriate definition of a mystical experience?
How often do they have it?
Or let's change that question a little bit. Let's just say you have 100 people that are cycling in through for psychedelic experiences. What percent of those people do you think in your experience have a mystical experience that is profound the first time going in?
I would say probably 35%.
Yeah, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that's a really accurate statement. I think that's a really important thing for people to acknowledge is that, you know, if you are more likely to not have a life impacting, altering experience the first time you do psilocybin. And I think that's a really, I think it's important people to understand and set the bar appropriately. Because I know a lot of people who have gone and done ayahuasca, they've done mushrooms, they've done a variety of different psychedelics, and they come back being disappointed. And they had a profound experience, but it didn't do what they had thought it was advertised to do.
Yeah. And there's there's, for something that has infinite depth, you know, it's like there's infinite learning curve. So I think like the journey on the way to being able to, I guess, admit that you're changed is really interesting, because it's like, you're probably changing, but at what point do you notice you have changed a lot? You know, at what point are you learning to surf and then you're just saying, I'm a surfer?
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Well, and it's, you know, in my sort of journey experience or something, you know, the very first time I, as an adult, I did a psychedelic, it was iboga. And it was being put through a washing machine and wrung out and folded. Like, it was the full deal. And then afterwards, I had a bunch of other experiences that seemed lacking, but, and I think I was disappointed. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, why am I not having this another big experience? And it took me a while, kind of like you're saying, to learn to recognize the little things, because this is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's a path that you're taking. It's very windy and nuanced. And I think being able to recognize what is changing and be happy with it and acknowledge it is sort of a really important thing in this space.
Yeah. Like this really easily made short story that I talked about on one of my podcast episodes, but it's so freaking cool. I'll say it again, is we had somebody who was really intent on having a mystical experience. You know, they were bordering on atheist and they didn't want to be, but they weren't going to just push over easily. They wanted to be like authentically convinced, you know? So massive dose, and they weren't getting there. And then what tipped this person over the edge was not something that like blasted them from a cosmic dimension, but they recalled a moment where they were walking a rather unruly dog. And the guy was getting frustrated with the dog pulling him. So he just stopped and just looked at the dog and was like, what do you want then? And he saw the dog have a facial expression, and then the dog chose a direction and then completely changed its behavior. And this guy thought about that memory on a high dose of mushrooms and was like, so me and I had a cross-species, nonverbal, emotional communication. How is that not proof of more than what meets the eye? And like that worked for the guy, and that was his mystical experience.
See, and that's the unique thing about psychedelics, is that it doesn't follow a playbook. It's not, you know, it's not something that you can stereotype. And that's actually such a cool anecdote, because it's, you know, if you were to relay that story in almost any other circumstance, just about the story itself, people would be like, oh, well, you know, I've had something similar, but in that space, you know what I mean? Like with that softness and malleability that your conscious and psyche takes on, and then viewing that from an alternate perspective, or perhaps all perspectives, it just sunk in and embedded, and, you know, go from being an atheist to what one might consider deistic or spiritual or whatever variation of that.
Yeah. It's like, You can have that sort of connection cross species, and it's like that came from just a big bang. You know, it's just harder to believe after that.
Well, you know, we could go on a whole path right now about the nuance of like the big bang and the organization of matter and life, and it does, like there's a lot of physicists who have gone into like quantum physics, and then it just got to a point where they're like, there has to be something. This ceases to make sense at this point when it comes to like superpositioning and, you know, Schrodinger's cat and these whole ideas of that something exists in every possible spin until it's observed, and then it picks a point, and which theoretically means that until something is observed by something conscious, that nothing else really has taken a permeable form. Now, whether that's a blade of grass observing the world around it, or a dog, or a human, or a single-celled amoeba, it does insinuate that in the absence of what perceived as consciousness, then there is no form. Which is it blows your mind a little bit, right?
Yeah. It's like you can't hold on to the idea at a certain point.
No, you just sort of let it go. Yeah.
Go into the greater.
So out of curiosity then, how did you get into this, man? Like, you know, you've put a lot of effort into this, obviously, like your time, and, you know, how did you end up in this position to be facilitating this many people? And you're obviously passionate about this.
Yeah, very much so. I was in very rough shape as a young adult. I had just the overall bad trajectory, and I would leave it at that. Very plagued by OCD and anxiety in a pretty intense way. But I was already a mushroom forager, and I'm in slightly rural Ohio, so I came to magic mushrooms just through the point of curiosity. I actually didn't know that they could be therapeutic or recreational at all. And I just approached it out of curiosity and young recklessness, I guess you could say. And the experience that I had was so strange, but I walked away from it able to quit a severe Adderall addiction like that. And I had massive progress in being able to manage my OCD. And it was just undeniable. So then I kept sort of traveling down that road, and I was a completely closeted psilocybin user for about 5 years. And I really did have this sort of prayer to the mushrooms, that I was going to sign up to go to a retreat in Jamaica. And I prayed to the mushrooms while on mushrooms. And I said, like, if this really does fix me, not to the point where I'm perpetually happy, but if I feel like I'm base level functional and healed through these medicines, I will dedicate my life to being an experiment to what these things can do and how to just push it forward and sort of put that kind of above more than my own wants, truly. So I did that, and then I went on this retreat, and very synchronistically, I went to the retreat thinking I was going to be the total noob, you know, but I didn't realize how experienced I was when I got there. And just through sort of integrating on my own and tripping on my own when I got there, I was surprised. And then by the end of the week, I was offered a tryout position to actually work at the retreat. And it was sort of put like, if you can keep doing what you've been doing, then you have a lot to offer in this space. So then I've just never quit doing, I've never changed my approach to mushrooms since the day I've started. And it's just gotten me all the way to this podcast.
So that's interesting. Now, I don't know, I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but what is your approach to mushrooms?
The short and funny way that I put it is, ask not what mushrooms can do for you, but what you can do for your mushrooms.
Thank you, John F. Kennedy. No, man, like that, that actually makes a lot of sense. Cause you know, that's one thing that like I've learned over the years of doing psychedelics is that I used to go into them wanting something. You know what I mean? And then slowly that attitude changed into simply just going in and just bearing my soul and being like, hey, I'm here. Let's just cut the bullshit for a couple minutes and let's just be vulnerable with myself and vulnerable with this space and this entity, this thing that is psilocybin.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like the plants, like, you guys know, like, how do I help you? Like, don't, you know?
You know, sometimes I wonder if it's, that us doing psilocybin is in a way a symbiotic relationship. You know what I mean? Like we're giving, and okay, I this is very speculative, but it's almost allowing something without a form to inhabit a form. And it's allowing me with a form to go to a place where I can exist without. You know what I mean? So it's like you just have to know how to have that relationship. You know, you need to know how and learn how to become sort of in a symbiosis with this space, with this thing, with this entity that is profoundly intelligent and, you know, all-knowing to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, even very early on when I was using psilocybin, it seemed to me that it has almost a personality, I want to say, and that it enjoys taking a cruise inside of a human nervous system.
Yeah, like it's, you know what I mean? Like it's playful, and sometimes it's a little bit more, you know, stern with you when you need it to be. But ultimately, I find like, you know, I remember I hadn't done mushrooms in a while. I was doing ayahuasca and 5-MeO-DMT, and I just happened. I'm like, you know what? It's due. I should do this. And then I had like 6 or 7 grams, you know, like a decent amount. And it was almost like a reunion. It was like happy to see me, and it was pleasant. It was moving through me. And, you know, it was just like this sort of a joyous reunion between two old friends. And I was just like, hey, yeah, man, it's been a while. We just laid down and it did its thing. And yeah, it was a beautiful experience. But there is something to it. There is intent. It's not random. Yeah. It's not completely selfless either. There is sort of a unique commingling between two things, one without form and one with.
Right.
So, you know, and this is, I want to have another question for you. And this is something that I think we can take a little bit with. So I very infrequently hear people talking about this, and I understand why. You know, you have, well, most recently 70 years of, you know, government propaganda and stigma. You could take it a couple steps further and say 2,000 years of stigma by various organizations. And so people never want to project anything negative about psychedelics. But I think there is a level of responsibility that does have to be suggested, especially when people have negative experiences and then think there's something wrong with them. So what are some of the negative things that you've seen over your tenure of facilitation thus far? You know, we've talked briefly about spiritual emergencies and different things like that. What's your take on that? And can you give me a description of what a spiritual emergency is?
Right. So spiritual emergency, and if we're sort of saying negative effects in relation to like overwhelm or biting off more than somebody can chew and things like that. You know, I think with psilocybin in particular, it's pretty forgiving compared to, say, like THC, but there's potential in all of them. And, you know, if you dig, you're going to find something. So I think there needs to be a healthy respect for how quickly you want to leap into those depths. And so let's start with ego death, for example. And again, I'm not a neurologist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm somebody who has jumped into the fire plenty of times myself. And I report what I see, and I've helped a lot of other people, in the midst of it. So just to put that up front, but there's a lot of this talk about ego death and then like left brain, right brain, sort of synergy going on. And if you're going to have an ego death, there's no reason to assume that that's going to be 100% pleasant. And there's going to be a lot of yin and yang in that experience. So if somebody has the merging with the universe experience, and there's no separation between you and everything else, it's, you know, you're the ocean, but you're also like somebody in the Congo in a cobalt mine, you know? And it's like, where's the bead of focus going to land? And sometimes that lands in a darker spot sometimes, and it's really intense for some people.
Well, that's a super eloquent way of putting that. You know, I really appreciate that explanation. And you're right too, right? Like it's one of those things that, you know, I feel my personal opinion is that I've never had a negative or a bad trip personally. But now that's my subjective opinion. I've had very challenging experiences, extremely challenging, but I sometimes wonder too, is this perspective? And like you mentioned too, is this an absence of respect and maybe perhaps flawed expectation going in? Mm-hmm. You know, like I want to have my mind blown. Then you have your mind blown and then you're like, turns out I didn't want my mind blown.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're trying to sort of reassemble afterwards being like, how can I be everything and now I'm something? How do these two things coexist in the same space? Because they did like a couple hours ago or a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago.
Right.
You know, there's seeming consequences to occasionally to going in. Maybe you could call it diving headfirst into the deep end of a pool.
But so it's, I think the main one that seems to trip people up is when we say the left brain is shut off and somebody's fully in the right brain, which allows for a lot of emotional healing and stuff to happen. But the left brain is what keeps track of, like, is my bank account okay?
Yeah.
Where am I? Am I this person? Am I married? Like, it keeps track of all of this stuff so that you can relax. You know, your feet are on the ground. So it's almost like when that's shut off and you can sort of float out into the abyss, if you try to like look back and then orient yourself in the middle of that floating away, then there's nothing to grab onto anymore.
It's like you're on top of like a 40-story building and someone's like, don't look down, and you look down and then all of a sudden like, and you just get paralyzed with fear. It's very similar to that. It's like, just don't look down. Don't turn around and try and orient yourself. Just be. But you know, and that's such an easy thing to say to people too. You know, you will be safe. You will be okay. You will come back from this. And then halfway through that little voice, we're not going to be okay.
Yeah. And I can get into how I've kind of made my methods for avoiding that state. Cause I'm here to tell you, like, I'm sure it'll happen to me again. You are never immune.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to, you know, I think preparation is really key there. But it is like, I see it as the brain and the body always have to like try to be on the same page. And they don't see the same thing. They have to communicate to each other. And sort of have this little game of telephone going on. And it's like you see the game show where there's like an electric seat and somebody sits on the electric seat and then they sit on it and they're like, ow. And they're immediately convinced that like something bit them. You know, they can't exactly know what happened, but their brain immediately created a narrative. Because we can't handle unknown. So the brain has to come up with something to explain to the body what just happened. So I can't help but notice when these extreme experiences happen to people that it's intensity overwhelm. They're fully taken by anxiety and just I guess general intensity, that all of the red flags just start getting thrown. I'm about to die is a big one.
Yeah.
Is the CIA after me? is all of this a dream and nothing's real? You know, just all of the worst case scenarios, because the brain just tries to throw the whole game board in the air to explain to the body what's going on, because anything is better than the unknown.
Well, and it's funny, one of the things that you mentioned in there, like, it's all a dream and nothing is real. That is something that used to permeate my experiences. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, my I guess remedy for that is simply, so what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what? So what if this is a dream of some infinite consciousness? You know what I mean? Does it matter? I think that pertains back to the whole ideas of, like, simulation theory and all this stuff. And, like, what are we in a simulation? I'm like, what does it matter? You've always been in. Every single person who's been alive has been in this simulation. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of runs in that same parallel. And that's always how I've sort of, like, calmed my down in those spaces, is that when, specifically a 5-MeO-DMT, when you're in, you're not quite at the void, but you're, like, approaching it or around it or circling it, and all of these things start coming up, and, like, specifically, like, I've come too far, or I've, you know, I've gone too far this time, and am I going to come back? And I've always just been like, so what? You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, sort of softening that experience inside you. You're like, isn't this always it, though? Isn't that always the fear that inhibits us from existing in a way that's harmonious within our environment? Is always that sense of, oh God, we've done this, or this is going to happen, or this. And it's, you know, if there really is truly such a thing as absolute enlightenment, I would imagine that it is a state of just being, so what? You know, and feeling, yeah, that viscerally inside yourself. So what?
Right. Right. It's very true. And yeah, it's, I guess it comes to being in the present moment.
Yeah.
Whether it's any of these fears, somebody's after me, I'm going to die, whatever it is, it's like, okay, but, like, right now you're okay. It's like you're looking through binoculars and freaking out in that moment. You know, you just have to, like,
well, and again, too, right? Like, we are animals, and to some extent, we're having to go against, you know, a couple hundred million years of genetic programming and biological function of, you know, going back to our mammalian ancestors who are being hunted, and our primate ancestors who are being killed by leopards, and all these other things. And you're like, if you're not vigilant, you die. And if you look at, like, gaming theory and stuff like that, when it comes down to evolution, is that perhaps our ancestors who weren't skittish and paranoid did die, didn't breed, and therefore you have a literal genetic predisposition to be freaked out about shit all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, and you're trying to, like, go against this, and it's interesting how knee-jerk it comes up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
even in day-to-day life, like, I like to think that after, you know, a decade of experimentation, as one might call it, that I'm a pretty calm person. But even then, every now and then, something just kind of creeps in, and you got to be like, okay, let's slow this down. We're walking back from this right now, because that's nonsense. Especially having kids. You know what I mean? You get into some mind cycle about kid cancer or some horrifying shit. And you got to be like, okay, there's an infinite number of terrible things that could happen at any given point in time. Why not just focus on what is currently happening? If something bad happens, we'll deal with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And whether it's real life or a trip, your brain can just go places through imagination. And the body, like, the anxiety levels in the body are at the whim of that.
Yeah.
So then the body's on the lower floor, like, is that shit really happening? Right. Yeah. Oh my God, you know?
Well, it's interesting that biologically, like, yeah, your body can't necessarily tell the difference between a real or imaginary threat. You still respond with, like, you know, adrenaline release and cortisol, and chronic anxiety still causes these effects of long-term fear stresses. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, like, you know, I guess I'm sort of, like, going back a little bit to the idea that perhaps involuntarily, the psychedelic community has created expectations for people going into psychedelic experiences. And those expectations are, I'm going to be cured. I'm going to be fixed. And it's only going to be one shot. And perhaps just that's our perception as existing in a culture permeated by Western medicine, that I'll just take a pill and I'm good. It's a one-shot go at this. You know, in your experience with seeing this, like, how do you view this? Do you view this as a winding path, or do you do see people that have sort of like a one-hit home run and their problems go away? Like, is that actually a thing?
It definitely varies a lot. And again, it's like sort of how people, like, I love this quote. I don't know who said it, and I should, but, those who can't see God aren't looking low enough. I love that quote because it relates back to the mystical experience. It's like, what's the problem, and at what point is it fixed? You know, like, how big of a thing needs to happen for whatever the thing is to turn around? So there's so much that's subjective before somebody will actually say with their own voice, this is fixed now. So I think a lot of it has to do with how primed people are and sort of what people are willing to take on in their experience. I think there's a massive benefit for approaching an experience to find out the ways in which they are wrong. Yeah. Very beneficial, like, stance to take going into an experience. Because, like, we're humans, we're wrong about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, about most things. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah.
But just having that posture is really beneficial. And, I'm a big fan of, like, it matters a lot more about getting the most miles per gallon out of your psilocybin rather than just taking more psilocybin. And a lot of that is in the preparation and priming yourself and getting very clear about what you want to get out of it, because it's a subconscious illuminating tool. You know, you just get to see what's in there, but you are still covering the ground. You know, you're not getting, like, picked up and moved psychologically.
Well, yeah. And it's like, you still have to do the work. You know, yeah. You still have to sort through this. You still have to make the realizations. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like it stems back to this Western sort of medicine perspective that I don't have to stop eating bacon because my cholesterol is high. I just need to take a pill and then I can just continue doing what I want. And it's like, now you can do psilocybin as much as you want. And if you're not willing to take the lessons or even see the lessons, then I feel like you're just going to be spinning your wheels.
Yeah. And that's another one for the mystical experience as well. It's like, so now you believe in a God, let's say, after a mystical experience. It's like, well, what does a belief in God do about your way of operating in reality? What does that change? You know, is it going to be you're only going to shop at local small businesses now? Are you going to start doing a charity, or, you know, what does that look like? And it's almost like, until you have, I ponder the idea that unless you have sort of the internal resources or character or something like that, that it's not going to reveal something that big unless it's able to have, like, an impactful change on you. Does that make sense?
It does, because it's, you know, again, like, we're discussing something that is profoundly complicated. And each individual going into this is going to have an experience that is profoundly complicated for their experiences, their psyche, their programming, their biology. And it's sort of interesting and somewhat difficult to try and generalize something like this. But what you're saying makes absolute sense because, you know, in my personal experience, being alive, everyone is fundamentally similar. You know, we all have like these core interesting nuances that permeate our psyche and motivate us to do specific things. You could say Maslow's hierarchy of needs is not even a bad place to start. You know what I mean? Like we need to feel secure in our environment and we're all seeking that consciously or subconsciously. And from those foundational points, we get more and more unique and complex and move out and become our own individual, nuanceful self, one might call it. And then having to retroactively go back into that and perhaps uncomplicate or unwind yourself. Like for me, in my experience, I never realized how profoundly complicated I was as an emotional, complex being until I started getting into these spaces and really let go into them and was like, I am literally a byproduct of every single experience that has ever happened in my existence. And every single one of these experiences, in some way or another, has influenced me to become what I am in this specific moment. I am ever changing. I am ever evolving. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily good or bad. It just simply is this constant non-static entity. You know what I mean? And like, and having to unwind and go into that is a really difficult thing to do. And, but then knowing the steps on how to do that and how to go into a humble experience. Right. And you're right. Like, I don't think I've ever really got a lesson that I wasn't ready to learn.
Yeah. Because we're talking about a symbiotic relationship with mushrooms. Like, they enjoy being in us as well. It's like, what would be the point of them running their own head into a brick wall?
Right. What I mean? Like, and it's, yeah, like, why bother give someone a lesson to have it thrown back in your face? And I'm you know, they're not spiteful. I've never felt that. But in that sense, it's like, well, you know, like, I think a lot of the times, too, is that people's absence of experience or absence of lessons, perhaps, sometimes pertains to an individual's inability to let go or an inability to receive something in that space.
Yeah, and it's because all of these things are going to be complex. Like, I almost feel like it's important to mention. It's like, I do have what I would call some mystical experiences in my past. And for the expectation management of the listener, it's not that like I've unlocked some new level that just alleviates all of this worry and stuff in my life. It is more complicated than that, where I feel I have an easier time letting go of things. My anxiety is a lot easier to manage because I feel that I'm not the center of what's going on to me at all times, you know? But at the same time, like having a real belief in sort of a higher power situation has made me, painfully empathetic, very prone to guilt, sometimes painfully, having a painful belief in karma and things like this. So in order for me to get the benefits of believing in a higher power, I have to take these things on.
Well, and yeah, man, like I know what you mean about that because I don't know, like even being a paramedic, right? Like a long time ago in my career, I made myself very cold to human suffering because I'm like, well, how do I experience this and then continue to work if I'm taking on all these horrible, tragic things? And then by doing so, obviously was not the right step. It's trying to manage an appropriate amount of empathy for a circumstance that benefits the circumstance without being destructive. And it's a very difficult thing to manage. And I've noticed that too upon like, you know, going from like very rigid and cold emotionally to being like, I'm almost too open to this and having to find like this balance. Like the whole thing is this constant balancing and juggling act.
Absolutely.
And I find it interesting that people are like, well, I want to go into this and I want to be fixed. And I'm like, well, you're not. Fixing doesn't mean things get easier. It just gets different. It gets pliable. You recognize these things. Like life is never meant to to be just simply this experience of perpetual happiness. That defeats the purpose. You know what I mean? Like, it's a requirement of contrast. How do I exist as Adam in this life and do the best that I can with what I have? And that's it. And then learning how to be more efficient at that, to me, is what psychedelics are about. Mm-hmm. It's how do I let go of all my baggage? How do I let go of that, you know, those experiences in my youth and as a child that have made me fearful or have made me angry or reactive about certain things? How do I just simply be Adam in the most embodied, authentic way possible? And how do you, yeah, it's like, how do you do that?
Yeah. And I think for any of these big changes, it really kind of comes back to perspective shifting most of the time. Like kind of what you were saying, the time dilation that comes from mushrooms, how that kind of sat in me was it translated to me how quick a human life is, and that it would be almost weird that I would expect to just kind of kick my feet up and chill and just kind of like wait the thing out. And it's like, we're barely here, you know, like,
yeah, it's like a flash in the pan, really.
Yeah. Like go thrash, you know, go get your heart broken, recover, do it again.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's funny that you talk about the notion of time dilation and stuff like that. And you're absolutely right. Like, I feel that experiencing or having an experience that shows how insignificant you are on a greater scale is something that's very humbling, but it also gives appreciation for time. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like a lot of people just go through life and be somewhat irrelevant, take time for granted. And it's like, no, like TikTok. Like every moment that you exist is another second taken away. It's like an hourglass, you know, perpetually moving in one fluid direction. And then being aware of that and perhaps being appreciative of it is a pretty important thing. And I do think that definitely psychedelics contribute to that in a very real and meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever, this is an interesting thing. Have you ever, like, time loops with psilocybin usually coming out of a big experience? Have you ever had time loops before where it's like, you know, you get into this infinite cycle of a single moment perpetually?
Yeah. I feel like I'm on the lucky side, and maybe it's just because of what I've been around my roommates and the things that they've gone through. So we've done a lot of like high dose tripping together. And there's something about a high dose come down that gets real slippery, man.
Oh, doesn't it though?
Yeah. Those high dose come downs. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah, you're on like 15, 20, 30 gram or something. And then all of a sudden you're starting to materialize back into this reality. And it's almost as if in that space, in a complete, complete breakthrough release, you just simply exist truly in a moment. And then when you start coming back out of it, now those moments start expanding and you're trying to bridge between that idea of I am a entity that exists and I have a past and I have a prospective future. But these moments, that only is a moment, and that's always seemingly been it for me, is like going from a moment that only exists. And that is on. You know, the reality of existence is that all there is moments. There only is one single moment. That's it. There's nothing more and there's nothing less. But embodying that and then coming back to the old monkey brain where you're trying to rationalize and have your past memories, your future expectations, it's balancing. Like, I remember I was in one and it was like I was coming out and I was like, I think we had done like 42. It was like one of the higher amounts, 42 grams of mushrooms. And I was at the sink and I was like drinking a glass of water. And as I was drinking it, it was almost like this moment where it was like, and I had done this an infinite number of times.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, and it was one of those things where you call it a mystical experience, perhaps. And the whole thing was a mystical experience. But this single point of like looking through the bottom of the glass at the sink was like, I have done this an infinite number of times. And it was bizarre. It was like resonating within me. And I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, yeah. And you're like, this could break me completely, or this could somehow make me stronger. And you got to make that decision. Yeah, it was wild. Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of ways that I can totally get like blown over in a trip experience, but I feel really lucky when it comes to those. Because for whatever reason, I'm good at letting those burn out, and I've definitely had them.
Yeah, it is letting go of them though, because if you hold on to it, then that becomes everything.
Yeah.
It overshadows whatever positive you might have pulled from the experience, and it just becomes. So I guess my next question would be, now that we've had this interesting discussion on wild things, it's like, how often do people have these experiences that require your assistance in being like, hey, it's okay, calm down? Like, you know, what is the expectation of that?
I would say... another one that's so hard to put the percentages to. And I feel like it's progressively, you know, I'm in a retreat setting. I'm working with a team. Other people have really good ways of preparing people for that. I feel like I've gotten better over time. So it seems like it's a percentage that fluctuates, you know, and I think you could almost say the percentage gets higher with the dose size getting higher.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but they happen often enough. Let me answer that way.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Like right now in Canada, like psilocybin is still Schedule 3 substance, which means in Canada our scheduling system is different than in the States, is that it's suitable for research into medicinal purposes. So it's not as if it's like heroin or whatever, meth or something. And so it's able to be researched. You can get licenses. It's not the end of the world, but it's still illegal to possess. However, now simultaneously, there are brick and mortar stores all over Canada that are selling psilocybin mushrooms seemingly with impunity. Mm-hmm. And it was still illegal. And there's online venues that you can be ordering mushrooms, and people are ordering mushrooms left and right. But what I see is the issue is that it's still illegal and there's no real infrastructure for people to go and have a container in which to have these experiences. They don't have a U. They don't have a team. They don't have the proper prep work. They don't have any degree of safety. And they ended up doing a bunch of mushrooms out in the bush camping or at home by themselves or with their friends or going out to a bar and they're like, yeah, let's eat like 5 grams of mushrooms. And then things go sideways and it happens a lot. And it's not a point to your character as the individual. It's just, hey, this shit happens. It happens to everybody. And we lack an infrastructure. It's like we've given a bunch of teenagers, you know, the keys to like a transport. And you're like, you've never driven one of these things before. We're not going to provide you with any instruction, but don't fuck it up. And you're like, well, okay, yeah, well, let's see what happens. Yeah. And I'm finding that intriguing. And like, you know, it's the same with cannabis. When cannabis was building up to being legalized in Canada, there was all these gray markets that existed and you could get like gummies and caramels. And then people were taking these with no real understanding of what happens when you take like 300 milligrams of THC. We are going to these calls where people are tripping out and in a variety of different ages, ethnic groups, like everything. And people are just losing it. Yeah. And I'm not to suggest that, you know, cannabis taken orally doesn't have a significant impact, but I would argue that taking a bunch of psilocybin without having a container to experience it in could potentially be a little bit more destructive. And again, you are probably more apt to have a good experience, but I think people need to understand is that you could very well have a negative one or a bad one or a challenging one or whatever you want to refer to it as. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you're, as an individual, a bad person or weak or anything, but this is just how this goes.
Yeah.
In outside of a controlled environment, outside of the appropriate prep work, outside of having someone there with experience, things can go sideways very fast.
Yeah, and I can go over something that I came up with a few years ago called the anxiety walkthrough. That is to avoid this exact thing. But it's like, it's one thing to have an experience like that, and you have somebody nearby that, like, you can be in that state where you kind of have come off the rails of productivity in your trip, and you're sort of freaking out, and you can ask a question to whoever's near you, no matter how ridiculous it is, and kind of get this constant reassurance, and just there's that. And then there's like really buying in strongly to the crazy ideas that you can have while in that state, and sort of let that, I use the forest fire metaphor all the time for this sort of thing, and just really let that thing spread. I think it absolutely is traumatizing to just simply be that scared for that long.
Yeah.
Even if it's not real. You know?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, it's, I don't think people realize how prone to fear that we are, or how manicured an existence we have created for ourselves to not fear fearful, to feel secure in our environment, to feel empowered and in control. And the reality is that we're not in control of anything. And then you have these experiences, specifically on high-dose psychedelics, and then all of a sudden you come to terms and you're face-to-face with, I'm in control of nothing.
Right.
And I think that's when, you know, the rails start to get a little bit shaky, and, you know, the old spaceship starts to rattle and pieces coming off. And then you got to make some very real decisions about, how do I get out of this? How do I accept what's happening to me? Or abandon ship and take your hands off. Everything's falling apart. And you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
it's a very interesting place to be. And I think you can never really tell someone, you know, this is going to happen. This is how you get out of it.
Yeah.
You just have to provide someone with tools to recognize. And perhaps when they're in that space to be like, okay,
yeah,
I'm okay. This is okay.
Because it's interesting, right? You can dissolve into nothingness, and then you can have one person who loves that experience.
Yeah,
and awesome. Then somebody who really hates it. And it, a lot of the time it comes to, I'd say the most common one is, am I going to be okay later during this experience? As long as I can have that comfort, I will allow myself to like be curious about what's going on now, but I need to know I'm coming back to the shore.
Is, well, really, there's also that thing, though, too, which is very valid to the point that you just made, is like, how can you be everything and literally merge with the fabric of the universe and then come back into this little filtered monkey brain? Like, can you be okay after that? Mm-hmm. And in my experience, yes, mm-hmm. you can do it multiple times and you can come back and you can be okay. You will be okay. But it's, you know, it's that own individual's capacity to believe that to be true, because you really end up with this contradictory statement, yeah, that defies all forms of logic. It defines really the entire perspective of a conundrum, where you're like, how can I be everything and nothing at the same time?
Right.
Yeah. And then you come back out of that. And yeah, it's, you know, I think that's kind of the thing, is where it's like, will I be okay after this? Mm-hmm. Will I come back, and how will I function? And I guess that leads me to another question too, is that in your experience, has anyone been broken?
I have not seen anybody permanently be negatively affected. It might take a little while. You know, I've seen people have a rough go of it for a few days afterwards, where, you know, they're aware that they're sober, but they're still like freaked out. And it's, yeah, it's kind of, I have two really interesting thoughts in my mind. And one of them is like, you know, I'm sure you've met people in your life that are like real ghost believers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, even if they see something as a child, maybe like the curtain knocked over the vase and the wind and something happened at the right time. And they got like so jolted with fear in that moment that they're going to be a ghost believer forever now. Or it can vary a little bit where something scary can happen to your kid. And it was in the kitchen and they got up at night and then they like, they're afraid of the kitchen for a few weeks. They're like, it was too unknown. It was scary. Yeah.
Too much shit happens. Let's just, yeah.
So it's kind of that same template that happens tripping sometimes. They're like, kind of have to reorient and sort of kind of trust the ground that they walk on slowly for a little while.
Yeah, that makes actually a lot of sense. And so just to turn back to this again, because I thought what you said was sort of reassuring for a lot of people who are listening. You know, you do like 5 people per group on average? I'm just saying for easy numbers.
Probably 11 to 13.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah. So let's just say 10 for the sake of numbers.
Sure.
And so if you're doing 10 people per group, 750, you know, that's... let's just say you're bordering on having 10,000 individuals who have rolled through your space that you've witnessed, and not one of them have had a prolonged negative experience after doing psilocybin. You know, that's pretty positive.
It is. And then for the listener, 100% of those people had experienced facilitators.
That is a reasonable statement as well. And then we get back into that whole thing. It's like, you know, in an absence of someone to hold space, how quickly can things go off the rails? Yeah.
And, you know, I want to go back to this anxiety walkthrough thing, because it works so well for me. Everything that we've talked about today, I don't see myself as somebody who's particularly, immune to these experiences. I've had plenty of them myself. So something that has worked well in the last couple of years is this anxiety walkthrough idea that I have. And it was after being with enough people that they get into this state and they always ask questions that if you would have talked to them before the mushroom dose, it wouldn't have been a big deal to them. Like, are mushrooms physically safe? Will I come back? Is reality real? You know, you have somebody coming to do mushrooms. They're like, yeah, reality's real. It's too real. I'm trying to take a break from it.
Yeah.
So it's all obvious things. And then if they get into this difficult headspace, they start asking all of these seemingly from the outside obvious questions, usually very repetitively. You know, am I real? Is this real? This, that, boom, boom. So what the anxiety walkthrough is just sort of priming somebody's brain. It's like, I'm just getting them to think in these terms. I'm not asking them like they don't actually know the answer, but I will sit with somebody pre-dose and say, like, do you fully like understand yourself? Like, did you watch YouTube videos? Like, do you really believe mushrooms are physically safe? And do you think reality is real? Are you aware that thousands and thousands and thousands of people have taken mushrooms and they are okay now? And it's sort of, I'm asking them the obvious things ahead of time that they could ask later in a state like that. So it's like, it's almost like it's priming where...
Yeah, you're preemptively sort of like going through these to be like, you know the answers to these. And these are fresh in your mind.
Yeah, and it can still go that way, but I'll tell you what the best case scenario looks like when the anxiety walkthrough bolsters somebody properly. Is they will get into this really anxious state where they want to go there mentally, but they actually can recall the conversation that we had. And the best thing that I can hear is they're like, you can see that they want to ask things, but they know they already went there. So then they will just sort of start stating things objectively, like, I'm tripping really hard. And it's like, this is super intense. And things like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, you're not biting on to your own derailing thoughts right now. You're kind of just zoomed out a little bit.
See, and that kind of makes a lot of sense. And again, too, like, you know, I just want to reiterate what you had said before, is that, you know, we're picking these possible numbers of the 10,000 people that have gone through guided facilitation. None of them have had long-term negative results. However, those people had this anxiety walkthrough. They had someone holding space for them. They had integration afterwards. They had the benefit of having people around them. And I think that's just something for listeners who want to try having larger doses to really recognize, is that if done properly, it is completely safe, completely fine. You know, a challenging experience doesn't mean that you're going to be damaged by any means irreparably. Mm-hmm. However, outside of that container, you know, it's a little bit different. Have respect for the substance, have respect for yourself, and be aware and educate, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's what, like, the whole point of this episode was, to come to this place to be like, yes, these are very safe. They're profoundly productive tools to give you the capacity to sort through things that you most likely don't even know exist. However, there are consequences to doing things outside of these containers that you described. And I think that's a really important take-home message for people that want to have, plan on having, or even curious about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, man. You know, like, we're kind of getting to the end here, but I just want to say, dude, super awesome talking to you, man. Like, your perspective on this, I think, is invaluable. And the amount of people that you have facilitated for and the things you have learned from this, I think, is really important. And I'm really happy that you provided me with your time today to sort of have this conversation, because you were able to mention things with pleasant analogies and anecdotes that were, I think, really good for people to hear. Because, you know, you can rattle on with fancy words and all sorts of things and not necessarily be able to impact with people. But I feel like the way that you described it was perfect, to be honest with you.
And well, geez, thanks, man. I always have a good time talking to you. We just go for such a cruise.
Yeah, I know. There was a couple times where, like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, we're going too esoteric. Bring it back.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah. But, yeah. Great job in the driver's seat for hosting this episode.
I try. Well, Danny, is there anything that you want to plug right now? Like, you know, you have your Danny Bluefoot podcast. Yeah. And is there anything else that you want to talk about or that our listeners might be interested in?
You know, mainly it's the Bluefoot Show. It's on Spotify. It's nowhere else yet. And my email, my Instagram is in the description of that podcast. I'm at Danny Bluefoot on Instagram. If you want, it's not a business page. But mainly it's the podcast, because I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
Right. Yeah. Like, so am I. Like, that's one thing about this podcast. It was, like, kind of done to be like, people need to know what these substances are. But now I've gotten into it, I'm like, this is actually really enjoyable. Like, it's really, you know, I find that when you're having conversation with other people that have done a lot of psychedelics, there's a weird level of authenticity within it. Where the conversation isn't about trying to, like, talk over one another, or, you know, it's not some sort of contest. It's just literally having a very real conversation. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about doing these podcasts, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And speaking of authenticity, I'm just going to get in front of a thought I'll have later. It's definitely not 10,000 people.
That sounded badass.
I feel bad if that mic was out there. I did the math, and I think it's like a little under 3,000, which is still fine, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, even if, still, let's just say 3,000 people have gone through and then have had these experiences in a proper regulated environment, and no one has been damaged to a point where it became a negative experience they couldn't draw anything from, mm-hmm. that's still pretty meaningful, man. And it really comes down to the same thing, is that if you want to do this, try to do it in an environment with people who know what they're doing. Have sitters, have people holding space. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to do it by yourself out in the bush while you're camping, that's fine, but just be aware that, you know, things might go off the rails, as they sometimes do.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, you might end up naked somewhere in a bush, you know, like 45 feet from your campsite, totally lost.
Yeah. You know, just get naked and get in a bush under the right circumstances, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you for talking here. And, you know, we'll put the links for your YouTube and your show and everything in our show notes when we release the episode.
I appreciate that, man. And I look forward to having you on the Bluefoot show sometime.
I know, man. It's going to be awesome. Let me know when I can come and we can have another conversation.
Yeah. All right. Cool, man. Thanks again.
Awesome.